Yes, so I'm studying health policy at the University of Nevada, and I was a postdoc at UCSF, and my collaborator is a student, Rama and Lisa, who had been my PI for 3 years, but they can't be here. Nothing to disclose, and I always like this cartoon where the pharmacist says the FDA likes this particular drug. The FDA is following a risk management plan strategy. Okay, yeah. Right. Too much license. Yeah. So the purpose of our study is to look at this risk management policy at the FDA. It's being increasingly applied to drug safety, what we call risk management plans. So I wanted to review that, examine the prevalence of safety labeling decisions, and focus more specifically on the black box warnings, and look at the black box warning process. And then I was wondering about the role of advisory committees in the labeling process, which I'll explain. To review the application review process, you probably know most of it. They receive the application, two scientific reviews may go to advisory committee. I'll show you not many drugs actually go to committee. Negotiate the label, receive a decision. As we heard, a recent figure is 17 months, although there's also the fast track drugs, which that will be my question for you after the session from the previous talk. Is fast track Waxman-Hatch or no? Well, anyway, we'll talk later. Okay. Of course, you know, it's an over $200 billion industry or more worldwide. A good example of risk management is Accutane, the drug for severe acne. Here's its current packaging, individual blister packs with lots of red warnings. It is a teratogen. There are 170,000 prescriptions a month, although some people estimate there should really only be a few thousand men in the United States who really could use it and benefit from it. It's been through 40 labeling changes. It's now having a blister packaging with the most severe black box warning. Pharmacists are registered. Patients are registered. Seems like every couple years they try to get more strict with Accutane. Now you need two negative pregnancy tests, including a blood test, every time you refill. There continue to be complaints. Covance Labs is running this iPledge system, an online system for everybody to register. Another good example is Lotrinex, which I probably shouldn't count, but it's been written up several times, including by Ray Moynihan, in the book Selling Sickness and in BMJ. But right now, the sales are down because it was brought back under a risk management plan after being removed from the market. And of course, Glaxo would like now to increase the prescriptions. Risk management policy is grounded in the law under the PDUFA 3, which was required for the FDA to issue risk management guidelines to industry. But they promised that there would be faster approval times if the manufacturers would provide a risk management plan up front. They created a new advisory committee just to work on drug safety at that time. The final guidelines came out in March of 2005, and they include pre-marketing risk assessment, risk minimization action plans, and a pharmacovigilance plan of the industry. And there's also a drug safety board that was created at the same time, supposed to monitor post-marketing problems, because there wasn't enough on post-marketing. And in the most recent amendments from end of 2007, they're supposed to be increasing a number of safety programs, so we'll have to see. But basically, as FDA applies these risk management plans, we thought that there was not enough data on prevalence of the plans, the context for applying the plan, and how they're even developed or created or written. So when should we require risk management? How do we evaluate that? What kind of plan should we enact? Is this evidence-based? what's the effectiveness, and will this even help patient safety? That's some of that's for future research. So black box warnings, they're the most significant warning, most severe warning. But a lot of people, as I found, I've talked to people, someone even asked, who really cares? And there's a lot of confusion out there among practitioners and patients about what the warning even means. It's that bolded warning on the package insert. It's supposed to mean in law that there is possibility of serious injury and death and or death. Across the countries and systems, though, people, different drugs have different black box warnings. So this suggests that the evidence base that's used for the policy decision is different, because if like Germany and the EU system has something in it with a black box warning and we don't, aren't they all looking at the same clinical evidence? So also patients and providers seem to misunderstand what they mean and don't necessarily follow the black box drugs. We know that physicians can go off label or prescribe against the warnings. Of course, they're allowed. And patients may not even see the original packaging, or health literacy was mentioned earlier. You have sometimes they're buried way down in those inserts, and you have to be able to understand what the warning's even telling you. But according to the industry, they may reduce prescriptions. California apparently has a new rule where they have to scrutinize black box warning drug use at hospitals before they'll put it on their formulary. Or they're looking at hospitals and how they're utilizing the black box warning drugs. So that's a new study, I think, from someone else at UCSF. And they may actually have unclear language to even to practitioners, even to physicians. And then the role of the FDA advisory committees. Under the FACA of 1972, a lot of government uses these committees of panels of outside experts. There are 965 across government, 242 in HHS, and 32 at the FDA. The Center for Drug Evaluation and Research has 16 committees, standing committees. Usually they have 12 members. They're chartered every 2 years. They can be created by Congress, the agency, or the president. The people, while they're serving for those 2 days, every maybe 2 or 3 times a year for 2 days, they're considered special government employees, actually. And they're subject to all the ethics rules. There's also a requirement that there's a consumer and an industry non-voting representative. There can be special consultants just brought in to single meetings. They're supposed to show diversity, which has different definitions. The only word in the law is diversity and balance. So this is being interpreted differently all the time. So you may recall with like the Vioxx advisory committee and other recent items in the news that there's controversy over conflicts of interest and how the role of these advisory committees. We had previously studied three advisory committee decisions for switching to over-the-counter and found that there was a serious lack of structure and standards. We analyzed the transcripts. The committee transcripts are public record, and that's the purpose of the law, to have public advice. The committee chair is given a lot of discretion in how to run the meeting or what will occur at the meeting. The FDA may submit a list of questions to this group, but the committee may not even address them necessarily. And there may not even be a list of questions from the FDA. In OTT switches, there's a code called DLAPS principles, or there could be several codes they might follow, but we didn't find that they were necessarily addressing any specifically accepted code of should we switch to over-the-counter. They discuss a lot of things that are not necessarily from the clinical evidence, like economic, political, and ideological impacts of their decision. They may not take a roll call vote. Sometimes they take a voice vote or no recorded vote. And in 1992, the Institute of Medicine did a study where they called for more uniformity and transparency transparency. And so under this study, we continue to study transcripts from the meetings. So this is qualitative coding of information from the FDA. 3 years of safety-related drug labeling actions from FDA's MedWatch. They have a monthly report. And from FDA's MedWatch, over 3 years, we got 1,569 cases of labeling modifications and new labels. Also, the same 3 years of advisory committee meetings yielded 106 drugs that they discussed. And then we did further research from that list of 106, including you can go to drugs at FDA and get the whole licensing history of each drug. And so we coded those. Of that 106, 47 were approved by the advisory committee, and we searched the transcripts for any discussions of safety labeling and risk management, basically keyword search, risk, or safety, or label, to see what they were talking about in the meeting. So here are the 1,569 labeling actions in 3 years. 174 were related somehow to a black box warning. Sometimes they change the wording, or sometimes they're adding a warning. 77 of those are adding a black box. 11 of those had gone through advisory committee, so not many of those receiving the most serious safety warning. And other things discussed by the advisory committee from this group, three times. That was not black box, but three others. Drugs with the most frequent label changes in those 3 years, we were interested from that list of what those would be. 17 drugs had between 7 and 10 label changes. 7 was kind of a natural cut point below that. Only two of those had gone to advisory committee, and 6 of those have a black box warning. So here are those drugs, Zofran being number 1, Cipro, Paxil. So you can see that only 2 went to advisory committee, but several of them have black box warnings right now. Now, of the group that went to advisory committee in 3 years, this is a separate data collection just to see, then we would match it up with the other list. So we found that the advisory committees discussed 106 drugs. 31 of those were new applications, and 75 of those were for some change. And then of those 31, 18 of the new drugs were not approved, 4 were approved with a black box, and 9 were approved with no black box. And then of the 75 for asking for revisions, 41 of those revisions were not approved, 14 were approved with a black box, and 20 were approved with nothing about a black box change. See, we were thinking that if you look at the difference between 4 and 14, new drugs don't as often get the most severe warning. You have to really, it's been on the market, and to us it's a way to keep something on the market because they go back to the FDA, they send it out to advisory committee, and they decide to keep it on the market, but with that serious warning of injury or death.
Is this the,
Yeah.
Is that the advice of the advisory committee on the right, or is that the outcome?
That's the outcome. Yeah, that was, it was getting confusing to show. Yeah, obviously the committee can recommend something that the FDA then does not necessarily execute.
If you looked at those numbers, would there be much of a discrepancy?
Not that I could find, although sometimes something goes to committee within the 3-year period and then the FDA decision won't come out for a little while. So it was going to be a different
set. FDA doesn't do what the committee recommends.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. On the, Right, but there were several instances of that, but not, there are a few, but not so many. Okay, and then we went back to the licensing history of the 106 drugs that were discussed in advisory committee. So this is a list of 106, but then the licensing history shows everything. So this is now going outside that three-year parameter. We just had this list of 106 histories. And so we were, just as an interesting almost kind of side note, who has had the most label changes but still no black box warning? These four drugs, Mevacor, Pravacol, so two of them are statins, Diprivan and Xenical. Mevacor, the statin, has gone through 35 labeling revisions in its whole history. But it's gone through advisory committee also. That's how it got on the list. But they didn't mention black box warning at all. So we searched the committee transcripts to see what they were discussing, the panel of experts. One of the meetings was on this telethromycin, Katec, and the advisor, a physician, is saying, I don't know what a black box really means, and I don't worry about too many of them. So we just thought some of these quotes were telling, because really we couldn't find much discussion, and really it was mostly confusion what we did find. Another advisor in a different meeting, Modafinil, he wondered whether the black box warning was a statement of risk, or if this, should we do a risk-benefit consideration? So he's thinking about the practical applications of applying a black box warning rather than having a panel of experts just looking at an evidence-based decision. They want to know if they're supposed to consider benefits. Other people wanted to consider other things. Other black box warning concerns raised at the meetings were relevance to state Medicaid formularies. Like, for example, they thought maybe if they attached a black box, it wouldn't get on the Medicaid system in certain states. From talking to people, I can't find that that would be true. I don't see why that should be a concern.
And more than once, really?
No, I found it at least once. Direct-to-consumer advertising, they thought there would be different rules for direct-to-consumer advertising, and they were considering this in the advisory meeting. And if this would limit treatment options, if doctors would be more reluctant to use that drug, and the person was afraid to discourage physicians from using that drug, apparently, because it thought it was useful. So basically, the advisors are really not clear on the purpose, the content, and the consequences of the black box warnings, and so they were really reluctant to apply them most of the time. Risk management plans keep drugs on the market is our contention. Few drugs are considered by advisory committee, even when having lots of label change problems, and these are safety-related label changes. Advisors are not fully evaluating all their options. Our limitations, we found just so many limitations from the FDA data. That it's so inconsistent. Sometimes there's metadata, sometimes there are summary minutes, sometimes just raw transcript. So it's really a challenge. We found a couple times where something was in drugs at FDA that was not in MedWatch, or I can't remember which one had it, but they didn't necessarily match in a few instances. So someone was missing something. And also, it's hard to even find past drug labels at all. These are, supposedly, the FDA calls these the safety-related changes, but I guess it could be a typo. It's hard to get the old label and compare it word for word, so you don't know. Some of these could be minor changes. And as I said, this cross-section of 3 years would not allow for lag times in the licensing process. We think black box warnings are applied inconsistently post-hoc without advisory panels. We need more guidance from the FDA and more evaluations of compliance with black box warnings. So thanks for your comments. Did I take my time? Sorry. Oh, I didn't mean to. Yeah.
One comment I'd like to make. involved in the process for the coming year.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Good. Any questions, maybe, if people want to say, thank
you. No, actually, you're right. There's sort of a loss of memory. We should probably get those statements related to drug things just together. There's been a few of them, policy statements. Revisit them, see what. But so I hope, I mean, I think you understated this findings, but I hope it's obvious. I mean, these are people sitting there with these most serious lives they're holding in their hands and saying, well, if we tell the doctor about this side effect, maybe it won't get on the Medicaid formulary, or so we really probably should include it. I'm sort of adding words to what you had there. And that sounds, so this is pretty interesting and revealing and actually shocking. Would you agree, or?
Yeah, I thought so, yeah. I thought I'd buy more.
Let's not tell anybody about this, because, you know, it might keep people from using this, right?
Right.
It's an easy sale, isn't it?
Right. Right. Very reluctant.
Well, I made the point at the other session, but I'm not sure everybody was there, that, you know, part of the new legislation says FDA is going to make drug safety information available to everybody. So they put the list of the 20 drugs up on the internet that are currently have safety questions. And the next day there was either an editorial or an article in both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal criticizing or questioning the wisdom of FDA making this public knowledge, because maybe it would scare people from using drugs. But, you know, here we are. We're pushing more information, more education. And Wall Street Journal, New York Times question whether this is wise, and that's the way.
When you looked at how many of the Wisconsin advisory committees or black box which actually leave the marketing function, for instance, some of them are with John, and some of them are voluntarily taking off the market by somebody.
Okay, yeah, no, I not systematically, so maybe, yeah, that's a good idea.
I think that's sort of a precursor to the next step in the process, I would imagine.
Okay, yeah. But it may also keep, I mean, we were thinking it kept, kind of gave you this disclaimer to keep something like that. Yeah.
Did you find any evidence that there were actually sort of serious side effect issues that were discussed?
Right. No, I never thought about tracking a few.
Backwards, yeah. Maybe you don't have enough data or advisory. I assume that's one of the worries, that there are things there that were sitting there that they failed to do due diligence.
Okay.
In an earlier
moment. So maybe later something came out.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one thing to say a side effect has emerged and there was no way to predict this or understand this, but I know Cindy Wolf is actually said there's a lot of these things were available to the committee and they didn't pay attention to them.
Right.
I'd encourage you to pay more attention to the fact that at least once they do come out, they're so often ignored.
It's not really a label, it's a black box insert, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's on the whole label, I mean, the ones I've seen.
But I mean, you know, a patient gets a bottle of medicine.
Right.
There's no room, arguably there's no room, but is there any indication on there that says, you know, there's a serious hazard to take this medicine. It refers you then to the
right.
Insert,
no,
which a lot of people
don't. Right, that's a good idea. No,
so
there's
no, wait a minute.
I'm
not sure. Is it federal law or is it state law where we are that the patient has to get an insert? Is that federal law? It's federal law.